Hello, I'm Tony Collins and this is the Rugby Reloaded podcast. This week, Australian Rugby League is consumed with the build-up to Sunday's State of Origin match. So I thought it would be interesting to look back to a time when Test matches against Great Britain dominated League Down Under and to reflect on how Rugby League explains the changing relationship between Australia and Britain. From Rugby League's inception in Australia, toes by British and Australian national sides were one of the most important features of the sport. The first Australian toe to Britain took place in 1908, the first British toe to Australia in 1910, and, interrupted only by war, the battle for the Rugby League Ashes continued until 1994. The fierce contest between Australian and British national teams appeared to be a graphic illustration of Australian nationalism and hostility to British rule. Test matches were marked by brutality and violence. To call it a game is a misnomer, wrote the Yorkshire Post about the drawn third Test match of 1930. War is a more appropriate term. This was how all matches between British and Australians were viewed. Clive Churchill's abiding memory of the 1948 Kangaroo Tour to Britain was the violence of the British club sides he played against in the early stages of the tour. The depths were finally plumbed in the 1954 Britain vs New South Wales Tour match that was abandoned by the referee after just 16 minutes of the second half due to uncontrollable fighting between the players. The officials are often as guilty as the players. British winger Alf Ellerby blamed the tour manager for indoctrinating players before test matches and remembered as disgusting the manager's speech before the Brisbane test match in 1928. In 1958, the former Kangaroo forward Ray Stair, now a rugby league journalist, noted that it wasn't only the players who felt it necessary to resolve their differences through fisticuffs when he recalled the fight in the team hotel between Australian tour manager Wally Webb and Bradford chairman Harry Hornby in 1934. But this fierce rivalry was not quite the full story. In fact, Australian Rugby League officials saw themselves as unashamedly British. This can be seen throughout the first half century of the league in Australia. British players were called chums in an affectionate parody of their Northern English accent. At a dinner to honour the 1928 British tourists in Sydney, Harry Sunderland, who managed teams both in Australia and England, told the visitors to remember Captain Cook. If he hadn't planted the Union Jack here, Australia might have become a Dutch dependency. In 1928, Sydney's City Tattersalls Club presented a trophy for the winner of the Ashes Test Series, hoping that it would help to perpetuate the true sporting spirit which is characteristic of all sporting bodies in the British Empire. Perhaps the most notable expression of this loyalty to Britain came from H.V. Everett, the Australian Foreign Minister and future Labour Party leader. He met the RFL in October 1945 to persuade them to organise a tour to Australia. He told them that the close relationships that have been built up between Australia and New Zealand and the north of England is in the nature of a history, and the building up of this history ought to be resumed as soon as possible in the best interests of rugby league football and of the British Empire. These sentiments were expressed well into the 1950s. We are just as British as you are, said the president of the New South Wales Rugby League, Jersey Flegg, during an argument with the British tour manager George Olroyd in 1950. This was strenuously reiterated by E.S. Brown, who addressed the British RFL Council on behalf of the Australian governing body in 1954. Australians look to England as the mother country in war, in industry, and also in rugby league football. He went on to explain that there is a strong desire in Australia to get along with England from every point of view. But this attitude almost completely disappeared by the mid-1960s. Great Britain tourists were no longer regarded as chums, but as poms, and even, on occasions, pommy bastards. This was due to factors both inside and outside of the sport. The 1950s had seen a series of disputes between the British and Australian leagues, which reflected their changing economic fortunes. In New South Wales, the legalisation of poker machines in 1956 brought massive sources of revenue into leagues clubs. The residential qualification for Sydney clubs was also abolished in 1959, so players no longer had to live in the immediate catchment area of their club for a certain period of time before playing. Sydney rugby league clubs could now compete financially with British clubs. And indeed, the ban on international transfers was renewed in 1957, largely because the British feared that there might be a one-way stream of players being transferred from this country to Australia. These fears were confirmed in the 1960s, as British players took advantage of their talent to move to well-paying Sydney clubs. Among the million or so British citizens who emigrated to Australia between 1947 and 1970 were a considerable number of high-profile rugby league players, bringing expertise to the Australian game and weakening the British. Starting with Leeds' Derek Hallis in 1963, the Exodus saw star players like Dick Hudder, Cliff Watson, Malcolm Reilly, and many other British internationals transformed the Sydney competition. The changing balance of international forces in rugby league was highlighted in 1961 by an Australian threat to cancel the forthcoming 1962 British tour unless the division of the tour's profits could be renegotiated. To cancel an Ashes tour, seen as the centrepiece of the international game, was an unprecedented threat, but eventually a compromise was reached. However, the actual 1962 tour was blighted by continuous off-field disputes, perhaps best encapsulated by an argument between the British tour manager Stuart Hadfield and a St George official who told Hadfield, "You are a lot of English bastards." In many ways, this marked a watershed. Previous British tourists to Australia had been surprised at the common use of the word bastard in everyday conversation, but had always regarded it as, in the words of Eddie Waring, a means of affection between friends. But the fact that bastard was now invariably preceded by pommy, or conversely, that pom invariably followed whinging, meant that language previously seen as friendly was now viewed as antagonistic and confrontational. At a broader level, these shifts in attitude also reflected the change in political relationship between Britain and Australia. In 1963, Harold Macmillan's Conservative government applied to join the common market, the forerunner of the European Union, without consulting Australia, then one of Britain's most important trading partners. Moreover, the 1962 Commonwealth Immigration Act ended free entry into Britain for all Commonwealth citizens, including Australians, who had previously been free to come and go as they pleased. Australia felt abandoned by what it had traditionally seen as its mother country. So by the time of the 1966 British tour of Australia, the use of pommy had become ubiquitous when referring to the tourists. The most egregious example was in a series of interviews given to the Sydney Daily Mirror by the British manager Jack Erruck, in which he allegedly stated that his Australian counterparts make my pommy blood boil and that he would never tour Australia again. These articles demonstrated the hardening of attitudes of Australians towards the British. The press portrayed Erruck as a stereotypical whinging pom who disliked everything about Australia. Every Englishman, it now seemed, was a pommy bastard until proved otherwise. This division became a gulf by the 1970 tour to Australia. Shortly after arriving, the tourists were embroiled in a controversy after an altercation at a party in Brisbane involving a young Malcolm Reilly, who took exception to an Australian calling him a pommy bastard. The controversy rumbled on for weeks and culminated in Reilly's arrest in Sydney. Tour manager Jack Harding complained that 1970's first test match had been portrayed as a hate war in the press and that the players were portrayed as beer-swilling and pot-bellied. In many ways, the working-class image of rugby league players also fitted the Australian tabloid stereotypes of immigrant British trade unionists, who were often held to be responsible for strikes and industrial disputes in Australia at that time. The 1960s also saw changes in the behaviour of the Australian Kangaroos teams in Britain. No longer was a tour of Britain seen as a patriotic return to the mother country. Off the field, it had become an opportunity for ostentatious displays of drunkenness and bad behaviour. The 1967 tour is remembered in rugby league folklore less for its on-field action than for the man-in-the-bowler hat affair, in which an unnamed Australian strolled through the centre of Ilkley, the Yorkshire town where the Kangaroos stayed, wearing nothing but a bowler hat. Hotels and pubs used by the team suffered extensive damage due to players' so-called high spirits, resulting in two of the most senior players forfeiting their entire tour bonus to pay disciplinary fines. In the 1970s, the relationship between rugby league in Australia and Britain changed fundamentally. As well as the end of deference towards Britain and the contrasting economic fortunes of rugby league in the two countries, the balance of power in the playing of the game on the pitch tilted hugely in favour of the former junior partner Australia. The 1970s Ashes series was the last one to be won by Britain. Between 1978 and 1988, the British did not win a single test match. This collapse in competitiveness meant that for Australian rugby league, the importance of Ashes test matches was replaced in the 1980s by the New South Wales versus Queensland State of Origin series. Today, the same aggressive hostility that was originally displayed towards fellow British chums is now employed against fellow Australian mates. So in its own small way, rugby league was a microcosm of the decline and fall of the British Empire in the 20th century. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Rugby Reloaded podcast. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my name is @ColinsTony, and if you want to dig a bit deeper into the history of rugby and the other football codes, take a look at the Rugby Reloaded website at www.rugbyreloaded.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.